2-0 win over the Pirates at Wrigley Field. Los Angeles Angels and Mike Trout at the friendly confines for the weekend. Game time this afternoon, 2:20 Eastern. The White Sox were off on Thursday. They're taking on the Yankees in New York tonight. Game time just after 6 p.m. Detroit Tigers lost at home to Cleveland 4-0. The Tigers are at Minnesota tonight.
The home of Notre Dame football. 96.1 WSBT, South Bend, the sports leader. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Oh, yeah!
On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
What is this?
We're talking Notre Dame football, the NFL, the Cubs, and more.
Oh, yeah, I like this idea.
The Leprechaun Lunch.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
With Sean Stiers.
All you do is dribble.
I have to dribble. If I give it to you, you just shoot.
And Evan Sharpley.
You're a chucker. You chuck.
If it's happening in sports.
Fumble!
We're talking about it.
Flag on the play.
Now your hosts. Woo! Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback. Evan Sharpley.
Glad to have you with us once again on this Friday. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, coming to you downtown Elkhart at Five Star Dive Bar. The lunch crowd has rolled in.
Today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've got a couple guests. This is Blue Gold Weekend.
It is Blue Gold Weekend.
And we've got a couple guests who are going to be joining us here in a little bit. A couple of guys who are part of The Shirt, Max Perry and Michael Conlon. You were telling me a little shirt trivia a minute ago.
I don't know if it's good, though. So The Shirt started in 1989.
Right.
Last national championship for Notre Dame.
1988. So 30 years of The Shirt, yay, but no national championship since then.
But I don't think The Shirt's going away.
I don't think so either. Makes too much money, right?
Yeah, the record is they did 165,000 shirts in a year in 2011, 2014, and 2015.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the significance of those, do you know? I'm trying to think.
I don't think there's any significance. Because there were a couple of years, too, where, you know, the record wasn't great, but the shirt sales were pretty high.
Yeah.
So there's not necessarily a correlation between team success and how well the shirt does.
Do you know what the colors of the shirt were in those years?
Oh, yeah, we can definitely look this up. Because I wanted to look back and say, you know, was there one color that did better than another? But I think it's kind of been hit or miss. There's been...
Yeah.
So if we're looking at just green... Because one of the 165,000 was a green shirt, but green also is 8-5 one year and 3-9 a year as well.
You got some good metrics on the shirts.
Yeah,
I wasn't expecting you to come hard with shirt shirt analytics and everything right off the bat.
Analytics, yeah. Well, there's analytics now in pretty much everything, sports and all sports. So now we're starting to bring it. But yeah, if you go to theshirt.nd.edu, it's on Notre Dame's website.
Okay.
They have a year by year starting again. In 1989, the first year they sold 9,000 shirts and they were 9-3. It even says who the manufacturer was. You have Hanes, it was a Beefy Tea and Scream Tea Star Best. And so each year it says, you know, who manufactured it, where it came from, how many were sold. So if we look the last couple of years here, let's go to 2018. So a 12-1 season.
That was last year.
They sold 155,000 and it was a green shirt.
And they also, had the green out thing last year going into the season with the Michigan game. I wonder how much that played into it.
I was a big fan of that. I really like that. So if we want to just go the last three green years, how about that?
Okay.
We've got 155,000 sold. They did 165,000 in 2015. And then in 2013, they did 156,000. So the green shirts sold pretty well.
What about, stop, you scroll back to that royal blue that you
like
just
the royal
went past.
Blue?
How many, I don't
it
like
said,
it.
It I'm said just... rise above. This was 2016. They did 150,000. They were 4-8 that year.
That's not bad.
No.
I mean.
4-8's not great.
Royal blue, obviously, not a Notre Dame color. Blue, navy blue. Yeah, so that's why I was curious what that one
2017
did.
Was kind of more of the traditional Notre Dame.
Navy blue.
Navy blue. They were 10-3 that year, and they sold 150,000 that year, too. So the sales certainly over the last probably 5 to 8 years has gone up tremendously, where most of the numbers are trending right around that 150,000 sold per year. prior to that, it was a little hit or miss. There were some years where it'd go over 100. And I think really when the shirt started taking off, and maybe I'll take some credit for this, I don't know. When I arrived in 2005, the shirt sales went way up.
There you go. There you go. Evan in the flex. Took shirt sales right through the roof. So, again, the two Notre Dame students who are part of the marketing of the shirt with the unveiling coming tonight. They're going to have a big thing going on at Eddy Street Commons right across the street from Notre Dame. And Max Perry and Michael Conlon are going to join us at about 12:30. We'll talk about this year's shirt and more history of the shirt. And you can quiz them if you want and see what kind of answers they have to some of that different stuff.
Yeah.
See what they're willing to unveil. As far as any teasers for the shirt tonight.
Yeah, maybe the they probably won't be able to say anything.
That's
the
what I mean.
Would probably be cool, but
yeah. Good question.
I vote for it's got to be green every year.
I agree.
I'm voting for a universal color.
I agree because that's you don't want a bunch of royal blue. Royal blue in the student section and the maze that they had that kind of yellow the one year. Just doesn't look right in the student section.
Well, especially like a kind of the traditional Notre Dame bluish color. Just it kind of looks like
it just blends
seat.
In. Yeah. It doesn't look like a seat.
It looks like a seat. That's why I like the green. I really do like the green. I think that would be great. And also, too, what happens is, I mean, if I'm just scrolling through the shirt timeline here on the website, you've got four or five different colors. Could be a different color shade of green or blue. And then you've got the yellow in there, too. So let's just say, you're not calling all the 80,000 fans that are showing up to Notre Dame Stadium on a given Saturday and all dressing the same. You might have a smorgasbord of different colors.
It's funny you said it looks like a seat because those really nice, cushy seats that sit down low at the 50-yard line or between the 30s or the 40s or whatever it happens to be.
I haven't donated enough money to sit there.
No, neither have I. None of us have that kind. We'll never see that in our lifetime. But those are they're navy blue and they're really cushy. And last Saturday's practice was inside Notre Dame Stadium when they had all the recruits and everything in, and so media got to be there and watch that. And so the front row, because they have covers on them most of the year, so they don't get all faded and worn out. But they took the covers off and we got to sit there and they were nice and comfortable. And one of the other guys in media said, well, no wonder nobody down here ever stands up. They're too comfortable.
That's a good point, because usually
that's
what?
Right.
That's the section that gets in trouble for not standing up and cheering.
That's right. All the people get yelled at. But again, they've got all the money, so they can do whatever they want. Stand, sit.
Golf clap, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Whatever it happens to be. Well, the Blue Gold game is tomorrow, and we'll have it here on 96.1 WSBT. We'll have a little abbreviated pregame show at noon, and then kickoff is at 12:30, and it's going to have most of the basic rules, but it's going to be offense versus defense, so it's not going to be your traditional scoring. So we're not going to really worry about scoring. But again, you'll hear it here tomorrow on WSBT. So we got to talk to the coordinators yesterday, and we'll have some audio from Chip Long here in a minute. But with your background as a quarterback, what do you think, first of all, is the most important thing for Phil Jurkovec, the second-year quarterback, wasn't here last spring. What do you think is the most important thing for him heading into the Blue Gold game tomorrow?
I think this is going to be the most fun he'll probably have had all spring. This is the closest he'll get to actual live game action, aside from playing a little bit last year and then in high school. So, for him, it's really going to be, trying to not do too much. I think that, in these types of settings at the end of spring ball, there's so much that hasn't been seen where you want to go out there, and you do want to make a good impression. The battle's not necessarily won this one Saturday.
Right.
What have you done up to this point? And then from there, can you take inventory on how the spring has gone and then take some next steps once we get into the summer? So, for me to make one broad, what am I looking for? There really isn't one thing that I necessarily haven't seen or heard leading up to this point that is going to say or make me think differently about him.
Well, the quarterbacks are always going to be the guys with the biggest magnifying glass on them. Everyone wants to dissect everything they do. We saw it last year, and it's interesting where Ian Book is now compared to a year ago, because last year it was Brandon Wimbush's job going in. And you could say that, maybe Ian Book had the better spring game, but really, that was really kind of the – he had just reached that pinnacle. That was the best, really, Ian Book had looked all spring. And, looking back, Brian Kelly said as much during last season after Ian Book had taken the starting job, that it was really at the end of spring and into that spring game where the light bulb really kind of went on for him. And then it was a springboard as he went into the summer and getting ready for fall
camp.
I think
that's a good way to describe it, is it, can springboard you into having then a good summer and a good fall.
Yeah.
You know, again, there are a lot of practices that they had leading up to this where you have opportunities to improve, you know, get more experience, increase your workload as far as reps are concerned. But, you know, for a guy, I think, like Ian Book, too, who really, in my mind, I think at that point, because his reps were limited to a certain extent, especially in his first couple of years, and his reps increased a little bit last year, even with Brandon Wimbush really being the incumbent, they wanted to make sure he would be ready to play. I think for him, it was a huge confidence boost to go out there and play the way that he did, and then that lead into what he did in the fall once he was given an opportunity.
So yesterday, offensive coordinator Chip Long spoke to the media first. He came out after yesterday's practice, and of course, one of the first things that came up, no surprise, was the quarterback. I think he might have actually been asked about the offensive line first, but then the quarterbacks came up next, and it was funny because he actually made a little math reference in his answer. So here's what Chip Long, the offensive coordinator, had to say about where Ian Book and Phil Jurkovec, the two quarterbacks, are right now.
Right, no, I mean, I expect a lot from Ian. You know, I told him, hey, challenge it, right? Really challenge the offense, test it, test your arm. And I think he's done a really good job with that. Phil, we have to understand the offense. Day to day, let's see some type of improvement. You have to be a guy who has to be able to come in there and win a game, right? But he had to learn the offense, take the steps, you know, kind of where Ian was when we first got here. I think they've both done a good job. Obviously, there's a long ways to go. With Phil, but he is, you know, battling every day. Phil wants to be a great player, and that's the number one thing you got to have in a quarterback. He has great confidence, but just like anything, he has to learn the day-to-day with the installation, the confidence, and be able to run the show. Ian's been doing it for 3 years. He knows the offense really well. He's brought really good, steady leadership. You know, he's not a vocal guy, but he walks with great confidence, and you can see that with his play with the receivers this spring and all of our skill guys. So, you know, Phil, one's on advanced calculus. The other one is still getting past algebra right now. So, Phil's still going to be a good player. It's just going to take time, just like all of them.
Did you take advanced calculus, Evan?
No. No, I didn't.
So what do you think when you hear Chip Long say that?
I mean, it's a good analogy. You know, I kind of attribute when you're learning a new offense, especially if you're going from, you know, playing in high school to getting to college, it's similar to learning a new language. You know, there's different verbiage to a certain extent. I mean, you've been around the game and played it really your entire life. And, you know, for a guy like Jurkovec and Ian Book, who have, you know, this isn't their first time playing the game, they know how the game works, but it gets much more advanced when you get to the collegiate level. I will say, though, you're seeing at the high school level now, there's more of that trickling down. So you will have some guys come in pretty prepared. I think 7-on-7 has helped with that in the offseason, similar like an AAU basketball or travel baseball, where you're getting to play a lot longer throughout the year. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the verbiage is different. You know, commanding a huddle of guys who may be 3 years older than you, those things come into play. So I understand his analogy between, you know, you've got something that's maybe, not that I would say for myself, algebra is basic, but just, you know, how far ahead an Ian Book would be who's 3 years into the program versus a guy who really, you know, this is his first meaningful install. You know, he wasn't an early enrollee a year ago. You know, the stakes for him last fall before the season started were very low because you had two guys that were fairly close. You had, yep, a guy who had won multiple games in his career, double-digit wins as a starter, and then you had Ian Book, who then came in and did what he did for the rest of the season. You know, until that point where maybe it became you know, I could have a role at some point. You know, he wasn't expected to play or perform. So
right.
Now you're looking at, man, my role has grown immensely without Brandon Winbush on this roster. I'm a play away. So my install here in the spring is really important. My development in the summer here is extremely important. And, man, I might have to play this
exactly.
Fall. So, you know, being able to get ready and prepare and understand the offense, it does take time. And I had some older guys tell me, not just guys at Notre Dame, but other guys that I had been around that I had played with, guys who had been through the program at Marshall High School, played in college, said at some point it kind of clicks. There isn't like an aha moment, but maybe you're like a week in and you're like, wow, I'm starting to see things I didn't see.
Comes on gradually.
The game slows down. What you're saying and how you're communicating it just becomes second nature. You know, now you're signaling in plays. You know, there's all of that takes a lot of time. And depending how thick the playbook is and the different audibles and checks you can have, you know, it can be very daunting. But for a young quarterback, you know, my suggestions to guys that are in roles like this where they could be playing, just make sure you understand your protections when you're in a passing situation. Because that's the biggest thing, is you might not know necessarily what route you should. But what I'm saying is if you don't know where you're picked up or where you're not picked up, mm-hmm. that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. So on Monday, there's going to – and I mean, it's going to be actually – during the game tomorrow, and then by Monday when we're
Monday morning
doing sports meet, yeah, and we're yeah. and we're there's going to be an overreaction to something. So when you look at what's the biggest overreaction we could see for either one of these quarterbacks?
Well, I think everything is going to be an overreaction. both
he threw an incompletion.
Yeah, both good and bad. You know, from this, really for these players, you know, this type of event is fun for them. It's a game setting. It's not practice. For the younger players that aren't, you know, 3-4 years in, and some guys don't get it in college, is learning how to practice.
Yeah.
I always loved the spring game because, I considered myself a gamer. I had to learn how to practice on a daily basis. And you heard Chip Long say that in his comments, is how do you adjust day to day? How do you go through the process of install, film study, practice, more film study, mm-hmm. make your adjustments, and then show up and do it the next day? That comes with a little bit of time. So, you know, for me, when you're looking at and what would things where people would overreact is, take this with a grain of salt, really. There are a lot of practices that the general fan base hasn't had access to, and even some of those practices where there are cut-ups. You might just see a move the field period where, really, Sean, if they are throwing incomplete passes, you should be worried.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's necessarily been the case. So, you know, within this game, if there are areas that are poor and there is concern, those could pop up this fall. But don't get too concerned on those. But certainly then also, as we've seen in the past, you could have somebody show up and have a really great performance that might not play it down this fall.
Yeah.
I think that's probably more common, is the expectations of when someone plays really well, that they should be playing on Saturdays in the fall. I think that, you know.
And you're going to see twos against twos and even
correct.
Twos against threes. So that's why you can't read too much into that kind of stuff.
I mean, my freshman and sophomore year, and I was in a third string role and then a backup role, I actually had better stats than Brady Quinn
right.
2 years back to back. And no one was calling for his job.
Why not? Well, how much do you think, again, when it goes back to Phil Jurkovec, because it's a guy, as you said, he was not an early enrollee last year, so he didn't get here until the summer. He got a taste of the offense in the fall, but then really once the season started, he was the scout team quarterback. And we've talked about that before. There's nothing that can be done to change that at this point, but he was a scout team quarterback last year. So really this spring has been his first full indoctrination into all of this, into the film study and taking it out to the field and just the whole thing. So how much do you think maybe it helps him now to kind of be able to step back, get a breath a little bit going into summer before they come back again in the fall?
I will say the fall will be a lot easier for him, you know, having gone through this. And my expectation in this situation is that I assume that both Chip Long and Brian Kelly were pretty demanding of Phil Jurkovec during this spring and making it as fall-ish as possible so that he understood really how he needs, not that you want to put undue pressure on him, but say, hey, you know, this is a different role than you were in 365. You know, you know, last year is totally different. You're still in high school, probably playing basketball, you know, going through the spring and then getting ready to show up here in the summer. It's different now. So I assume that they were pretty demanding on him and saying, you've got to get ready.
Yeah.
And I think, though, now is having gone through it and now it culminating in a spring game, not that it'll be a little bit of a breath of fresh air once this is done, but it's going to ramp up in the summer. But going through now this install in the fall, he'll feel much more comfortable having gone through that.
So if there's a concern, I guess you'd say right now, about Phil Jurkovec, it's probably his accuracy. And he's got the big arm. He gets the ball downfield. He stretches the ball differently than Ian Book can, but it's the shorter game that is maybe his issue right now. So Chip Long, Notre Dame offensive coordinator, addressed that yesterday.
Right. You know, I mean, we have obviously had 2 years to figure that out, so we know how to protect him with that. Obviously, it's my job to put him in the best situation to work with that, and a lot of that is just it's confidence, you know, for a young guy. And, you know, he has to work on it. For this offense to be, or any offense for that matter, the quarterback has to be accurate. We have to be able to take the gift throws and obviously hit the ones when we need it the most. And he's been throwing a nice deep ball, but I think more of anything is just understanding the offense, going through his progression, and once he gets confident with that, that ball will come out a lot cleaner. You know, he was a great quarterback in high school. I saw him throw, so, you know, he'll get it fixed.
So Chip Long saying that Phil Jurkovec will get it fixed. And it's not, this is not, if you've got Ian Book on one end and Brandon Wimbush on the other end, talking about accuracy, specific to short passing accuracy, I would say Phil Jurkovec is in the middle somewhere. It's not like he's just throwing the ball into the ground all the time when he's throwing short passes. It seems like, as Chip Long was saying, a lot of it has to do with the reads and just ease of the offense, comfort in the offense. So what do you think of when you hear all that?
I'll talk out of both sides of my mouth on this a little bit, because there is something to be said about if you don't know where the ball's going or the game is moving fast. Sometimes mechanics can break down, or you can rush the throw, or you're not trusting your base and your lower half. So the accuracy could go down. The other side of that is, sometimes, I mean, I've been around guys that they're just naturally accurate. They always were growing up. And you've got other guys that they really struggled with that. So it may be, you know, you got a 14-yard comeback, they throw on a line, and then for whatever reason they have a swing pass that's 5 feet away from them and they throw it into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of that is innate. You know, that's something that's built up over time. So if you're seeing it now, even if it means that they're not going through their progressions in the right mode or mentality, they still may pop up even when that development occurs too, which is something that we saw even with Brandon Wimbush a year ago. Was you're saying, okay, he's been in the program now for 3 to 4 years. He should have a grip on, here's where the ball goes, I should be in rhythm and timing to be able to deliver an accurate throw, and it still didn't happen all the time. But then he'd, you know, move and throw on the run and lace one in the needle, and you're like, how are you able to make that throw, but you can't complete a slant that's 5 yards away?
Yeah.
So I think it's a little bit of both. You know, a guy like Ian Book, for me, is one that I think is just, he has that innate ability and always has been pretty accurate. If you look at what he did growing up, what he did at the high school level, he's always been around 70%. I've talked with guys that have trained with him and trained him specifically, you know, when he was in high school. Will Hewlett, who's a quarterback trainer and works with a lot of different guys across the country, he said, well, we didn't have to do a lot with Ian as far as his mechanics. We didn't have to really focus a lot on accuracy. He's always really been pretty pinpoint as a thrower. And some guys, again, I've been around those guys. Some guys just have that.
When you look at Ian Book and you think about Notre Dame quarterbacks over the last 15, 20 years, right, is there really anyone else who's comparable to the way Book is, just with that, with the short game specifically?
Tommy Reese. Tommy, you can't compare their athleticism. Ian has a step couple steps above Tommy, and I think Tommy knows that too. But, you know, one thing he did a really good job was is he got the team into the right place, and he had a really quick release. He was accurate on the throws that he needed to be accurate on. The arm strength, you know, we're not talking about a guy who had a super strong arm, but he had a strong enough arm to make the throws.
Yeah.
As far as their skill set, you know, I would put them pretty close. And even a guy I played with, Jimmy Clausen, you know, I didn't think he had a really super strong arm either, but he was accurate as well. But really between those three guys, I mean, I think Ian has probably the greatest chance to consistently complete between 70 and 80% of his passes.
No, I agree. So one last quick thought, Chip Long, talking about Ian Book and his throws.
You know, it's been good. You know, him and Chase have had really good chemistry with Chris, challenging the balls down the field. You know, you can't really tell in practice. I want to see it on game day. I want to see it when we're playing elite teams. But he's challenging himself, you know, with his whole throws, and there hasn't been a fear. He's turned it loose and it's had some good throws and had some bad throws and had some drops. But you got to push yourself to do that if you want to be considered an elite quarterback.
And I guess I should have probably clarify that was more about the longer throws.
Correct.
Downfield, because
yeah.
That was what
he missed some last year.
Yeah, he did. And one thing Brian Kelly said last week was some of those deep throws that Ian Book was throwing, they were too flat. There wasn't enough air underneath mm-hmm. them. Let the receiver get under it a little bit. And last Saturday, some of those things that Chip Long was talking about, the connections with Chase Claypool, some of the back shoulder stuff he was doing, the deeper stuff downfield, you could see there was more arc. You could see a progression that really probably took until the later parts of this spring before we really started seeing that.
Well, one thing I hope he doesn't change was, you know, the back shoulder throws a year ago to guys like Miles Boykin, really, you're going to have, those are going to be a little more firm throws. What we would call them is like a level one. It's going to be more on a line. You've got some level twos, which you may see on back shoulder, where it's going to kind of go above the receiver's head a little bit and then kind of drop back down. But I have to agree with what Kelly said on a few of those throws that he missed last year. I mean, you had a Chris Fink running wide open. You really had the entire field.
Yeah.
And as you get further down the field,
just took a little touch.
What you need to do for the receivers to give them the ability to adjust is put a little more of an umbrella throw, so like a level three throw where they can adjust, because the further you get downfield and the firmer you are, the harder it is for the receiver to adjust and the more pinpoint you have to be as a thrower. Because we're not talking like, you know, it's just gonna be a snap of the fingers and the ball is there. It's gonna take a little bit of time for the ball to get there.
How much though, as a quarterback, are you thinking about? Okay, if I throw it up there a little bit more, you're worried about a safety drifting over and making a play on the ball.
Well, if you're doing your due diligence and you know coverage they're in or where the safety is,
it shouldn't be an issue,
right? Unless that safety is maybe playing outside of their parameters and saying, well, we're
trying to deke a little bit.
We're watching the quarterback's eyes, and I understand he's gonna do that, but at the same time, you know, if you know where the opposing players are based on what you're seeing pre-snap and then post-snap too, you should be able to give your receiver a chance. And there are more times than not, though, I would say last year, and there were points left on the scoreboard, that Ian Book did a pretty good job of giving guys like Chase Claypool and Miles Boykin a chance to go up and make plays.
He's Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stires, Leprechaun Lunch. Sean and Sharpley, 5-star dive bar, presented in part by Reliable Roofing.
That's right. Reliable Roofing. They do both commercial and residential roofing. They got a 50-year warranty on shingled roofs. All of their roofers are trained and certified to the highest standards in the industry.
We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, we'll be joined by Max Perry and Michael Conlon, a couple students from Notre Dame. The shirt, the 30th edition of The Shirt at Notre Dame, will be unveiled tonight, 6 o'clock at Eddy Street Commons, and Max and Michael will be here to discuss all that, everything that's going on in some of the history of the shirt. So we'll do that right after we take this time out. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, 5-star dive bar, 96.1. WSBT, the sports leader. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, 5-star dive bar, downtown Elkhart. As we get ready for Blue Gold Weekend, the Blue Gold game will be tomorrow on 96.1. WSBT kicks off at 12:30. We'll have a pregame starting at about 12 o'clock. Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and I will be there at Notre Dame Stadium. And also coming up tonight, we were talking about this earlier, it's the 30th anniversary of The Shirt. It's going to be unveiled tonight, 6 o'clock at Eddy Street Commons. And joining us right now are a couple of guys involved in the shirt, Michael Conlon and Max Perry. Guys, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing great. Are either one of you guys Game of Thrones watchers by any chance?
Oh, of course. Absolutely.
Actually, no, but I've respected that stuff.
Well, what I want to know, because there's always this secrecy around the shirt, so which is the bigger secret, the shirt, which is going to be unveiled tonight, or the plot to the final season of Game of Thrones?
I thought you were going to ask, is there going to be like a Game of Thrones flair to the
any
shirt?
Tie-in now? That would have been nice.
Honestly, I have to say, probably the color of the shirt. You know, we have to sign non-disclosure agreements and everything like that, and it's a big secret. I think that, you know, you never know when Jon Snow goes on a talk show if he's going to reveal the end. But the rest of us are sworn to secrecy, so.
Is there any chance we can get it to be green every year? How can we make that happen?
We'll make some calls, but I can't promise anything.
I'm sure the wheels are probably already in motion, but how about we do this? How about you give us a little background on that? We were talking a little bit earlier about shirt sales, a little bit of the history, but give us a little background on the shirt and even your guys' involvement too.
Okay, so this is the 30th year of the shirt, and basically our mission is to unite the student section and alumni and the fan base all in one color in the stadium, you know, really get school spirit up and going to create an intimidating atmosphere for the opposing team. And in doing so, we're a nonprofit. We donate to our select charities. We have the shirt charity fund for students with high medical bills. We also have the student experience fund that we donate to, which ensures that all students have access to the complete Notre Dame experience, whether it be needing football tickets or needing clothes for the winter. We help out with that. And then we also help fund various student organizations and activities to make sure everyone gets involved on campus. And it just really encapsulates the Notre Dame experience and having great faith and great community.
Take us through the process of the design of the shirt, the color of the shirt, the whole thing. How many people are involved in that process? And just kind of go through that a little bit. And, you know, what goes on the shirt, obviously, too.
Sure. So generally about a 15 student committee, my experience, that's generally been the number it's hovered around. The process really starts essentially once the shirt from the previous year gets unveiled. You know, we obviously spend time promoting that shirt for the upcoming year. But once students get back around August, that's when the plan for the next year's shirt go into effect. Applications to be on the shirt project go out August, September. Returning members meet, and then by October, the committee for the upcoming year is set. They try to have the color decided by Christmas before we go home for Christmas break, and then generally the design is decided around February, and then it really just kind of gets pumping into printing the shirts. And you know, we just got our shipment to campus this week, so.
So that all culminates tonight at 6 p.m. at the Eddy Street Commons. Talk to us a little about the event tonight. What's going to be going on?
All right, yeah, we've got a lot planned for tonight. We have Patrick Warburton of Seinfeld and the Emperor's New Groove fame coming. We're really excited to have him. He really appeals to the different generations, whether it be my parents' generation and being Putty from Seinfeld, or my generation and being Joe from Family Guy, or from Emperor's New Groove. So it appeals to everyone. And he's a really nice guy. He's actually doing this for charity, Coliseum Athletics, who contacted him. He's our supplier for the shirt. Not the company is the supplier for the shirt. And they contacted him, and they're actually going to donate it to St. Jude's in Patrick's name as compensation for him showing up, and he's really excited for it. He's going to be available for autographs and meet and greets starting at 4 o'clock at O'Rourke's on Eddy Street. And then since it's on Eddy Street this year for the first time, we're going to have a lot of different free samples and tents outside from the various restaurants and businesses. We're going to have food deals going on. And then it all leads up to at 6 o'clock, Brian Kelly himself is going to be unveiling the shirt. We'll have the band there, we'll have the cheerleaders, and it's going to be a really exciting time.
Will the shirt clash with purple pants if Brian Kelly wears purple pants again tonight?
you know, we don't want to talk too much about colors, so we don't want to give anything away.
All right.
Do we know what size shirt Brian Kelly wears?
It's a good question. I would guess a large.
The non-disclosure covers that too, so we don't want to talk about that.
So are there any hints or secrets at all you can give us about it? Whether it's not necessarily the color, but any theme of the shirt?
Well, we want to encapsulate the tradition of Notre Dame football in each and every shirt. And I will give you this hint on the color. It's either going to be green, blue, yellow, black, white, gray, or any other color.
Okay. That's not vague at all. It is just as guarded as Game of Thrones and Jon Snow and everybody else. On a scale, let me ask you this. On a scale of 1 to 1,000 buckets of shamrocks, how excited are people going to be when they see the shirt tonight?
Oh, I think 1,001, honestly. It's going to be great. It's going to be fun. Obviously, there's some excitement, given how last year was such a successful year, both with the football program and with what we were able to do with the shirt. The Michigan game being a green out was really helpful for us, given that, you know, the shirt was green last year, and that really, I think, you know, just talking to some people both in the stadium and on the football team, that really, really helped the atmosphere. And I think that we're riding that momentum going forward, so people are going to be really, really excited about tonight, too.
Notre Dame students Max Perry and Michael Conlon. Guys, thanks for joining us. Have fun out there tonight.
Thanks, guys.
It's going to be quite an event, as always.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care. That is, again, Michael Conlon, Max Perry. The shirt, the 30th edition, comes out tonight. Did you?
Green, baby.
It's got to be green.
I'm just saying.
Have they ever had a white one? You had your
I would
thing
be,
there.
I would be okay with white, too.
I would, too, because that I think green and white, the yellows stand out as well, but it's just not in a good way, I don't think.
I'm all in on Kelly Green every year.
I do, too.
Especially, all in.
Yeah, because I think that's, if you want the entire stadium to try to look the same, I mean, that's the best way to go.
Think about it, if you do that for 5 years, everyone will be wearing green.
I agree.
They'll all be wearing green. And here's what I'll do. I'll tell Max and Michael that if they put me on the shirt, I will guarantee over 200K on the sales. Break the record.
Bearded version or non-bearded version of Evan Sharp?
I don't know. We could go...
Or just helmet.
Helmet would probably be good.
Helmet 13.
I don't know. Maybe the bearded version.
All right. Let's do a quick round of Who Said It. We've been doing this the last couple of weeks. I get some sound bites from Notre Dame players when we get to talk to them at the media availabilities. I play them for Evan. He has no idea who they're going to be. He listens and he tries to guess who said it. It's pretty simple. So, Let's go. You're 7 for 8, by the way, in the first 2 weeks. I've only got 3 today, so we'll see how it goes. Let's hear cut number 1.
Is it hard to pace yourself when you do get out there?
It is. I mean, that's been the biggest challenge for me since January. I want to go, and being able to step back and, you know, relax a little bit is tough. I want to be out there with my guys. You know, I have my own goals that I want to set and accomplish. So it's been a good, different process for me that I'm trying to work towards.
All right.
Safety Alohi Gilman.
Nice. Very well done. Ding, ding,
ding. He sounds kind of like Robbie Tomo a little bit.
He does. That Hawaiian accent, obviously. And I think they're all actually from the same, like within five blocks of each other in Hawaii, which is crazy.
He's one of my favorite players, too, on this team.
Alohi?
Am I allowed to have favorite players?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Why not? Everyone's allowed to have favorite. But he was talking about, I asked him about pacing himself because he's had the abdominal injury. He actually said that he played with it in late November and in the Cotton Bowl as well, but now he really hasn't played a whole lot this spring. We've seen more of him probably in the last week and a half, 2 weeks, and still just kind of going through, I don't want to say going through the motions, but yeah,
we know what he can do.
Yeah,
let's get some other guys prepared.
Exactly. He said he's probably between 80 and 90%, somewhere like that right now, but obviously a very key part of this defense. Second in tackles last year to Tavon Coney and the top returning tackler, obviously, for this coming year's team. So Alohi Gilman, we may or may not see him tomorrow. If it were me, I would just say
stay on
the sideline, Alohi. Don't go out there and play at all. All right, so here's cut number 2. Who said it?
Well, this is when I first came in. It was X for me, and then I was behind Cam Smith and learned the ropes from Cam. And then as the season progressed, they started moving me in the C. And then season's end, they moved me back out to X. And then last year, you know, Cam dominantly at X. The field is just awesome. I just love it. You get the one-on-one matchups as if you do if you're in the boundary playing a W. And you also get the zone. So, you know, the hitches, the slants, the out routes, you know, that's you know, a give and take for me right there. And, you know, that's easy. I just like having an open field. I like having space to work with. I can be in tight quarters as I've developed over, you know, over this past spring. I've developed being in tight quarters. And, you know, it doesn't affect me as much as it would in the past seasons. But just the field is just all that space. I can do so much. And it's just like a freedom that you – it's a freedom that I really can't explain. It's awesome. I love it.
So first, do you know what position it is?
Wide receiver.
Wide receiver.
Is it Kevin Austin?
It was not.
Oh, man. Who is it then?
You went a little early
on
that. He was talking about X and Z, two wide receiver positions, moving from one to the other, and he's at the field now. It is a little more veteran, Michael Young.
Oh.
Understandable, though, because we really haven't seen that much of him, because it's one, he's been behind the two guys he was talking about there.
I should have
predominantly.
Got that one.
Yep, so it was Michael Young. He's going to be at the field receiver this year with Chase Claypool moving over to the boundary where Miles Boykin was. And he's shown some good things. He's not as big, obviously, as either one of those guys. But when you've got potential of a guy like Claypool with his size and speed, I mean, that you could make some plays if you're Michael Young out there.
I like that spot for him.
Yeah. Yep. He's looked good.
I don't like that I got it wrong.
No, there's a lot of talent at the wide receiver position, though.
There always is.
I know.
I feel like there always is.
I mean, it's been coming these last few years. It's exciting. Okay, so you're 1-for-2 so far, batting 500. Last one here is cut number 3.
I'm not going to change who I am, but I understand that I'm, you know, an old guy on the team now, one of the oldest, if not the oldest, and I'm in a leadership role, so I know that people look up to me and that what I say has some weight. So, like you said, the vocal part is definitely playing a bigger role now.
So that's a guy asked about being a leader. I'll give you a couple hints. He's asked about being a leader. He's a veteran.
Yeah. I mean, there's one guy that comes to mind right away.
Offensive side of the ball.
Yeah. Is it Chris Finke?
There you go. All good job. Well done.
Yeah.
And I thought that one was going to be a little bit harder
than
Michael Finke Young.
Chris Finke has been to Sharpley training.
Has he?
Yeah.
That's right. Didn't
That's
you tell me that he and Wimbush worked on some quarterback stuff?
Yeah, he came over and just Brandon wanted to get a little extra work. This would have been his redshirt year
before,
when he wasn't playing.
Exactly, a couple years ago.
And literally it was just they came in to get a little because they weren't doing much.
Yep. Fink, a fifth-year guy, obviously started his career as a walk-on, and now he goes into his last year as one of the leaders of the offense. He had 49 catches, 571 yards, 11.7 per catch, 2 touchdowns. Last year. Do you think he'll beat all those numbers this year?
I hope so.
It's hard to, again, it's hard to gauge because you don't know what the other guys are going to do, for example. It was
pretty evenly balanced last year. If you have a guy like Claypool really break out, that could, you know, force action away from the slot.
Yeah.
But you could have, you know, the balance, though, could be important where if one guy really does start to have a couple of good games, you may see teams start to roll a safety over towards the top so they're not able to do that, and that may open up some opportunities for a guy like Chris Finke in the slot.
Yep, exactly. So you ended up going 9 of 11 overall.
Okay.
So that's right around 85-90%,
right?
Put
me in the Hall of Fame if I'm playing baseball.
That's right.
And then some.
So you only missed 2 over the last 3 weeks.
And I probably should have got Michael Young.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do?
That's all right.
We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, we'll wrap up talking about some basketball. NBA playoffs have ended. The NCAA tournament obviously just ended. Virginia crowned champion. And there's a poll that they did on The Athletic. We didn't get a chance to get to this last week. I want to get
to
some of these today. So we'll do that coming up next when we continue at 5-Star Dive Bar. Sean and Sharply, Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Dive Bar, downtown Elkhart, 526 South Main Street in the former State Theater. It is lunchtime, of course, and you can smell all that good food. What's our
chicken Caesar wrap with fries for $8?
Nice. I think we had that once or twice.
I think so.
And remind everybody about Reliable Roofing as well.
Yes, Reliable Roofing, they do both commercial and residential roofing. They've got a 50-year warranty on shingled roofs. And then tonight we've got Julia James at 6 p.m. and then the Incredible Johnsons.
All right. Sounds good. A lot of good stuff coming on here tonight at 5-Star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart. NBA playoffs starting this week. Regular season just ended. Level of excitement, scale of 1 to 10?
Mm,
that low.
Not
do you
high.
Think, do you think it hurts that it starts right on the heels of March Madness and everything else?
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, I really like the idea, and I think you were possibly going to pose this too, of just seeding the best teams, regardless of conference.
Well, that's...
And then playing a single elimination tournament, very similar to March Madness.
So you would go seed it and single elimination.
Well, that would be like...
I don't think the NBA would go for that. I don't think they'd go for both.
Well, it wouldn't make enough money.
That's exactly right.
Okay, so let's seed it and do actual, like, you could then play, whatever, a five-game series.
So you would seed regardless of conference.
I really like that idea.
I do,
I've
too.
I've liked it for a few years now.
I mean, it's always cyclical as far as which conference is better than the other, but it seems like it's always heavy.
It hasn't
heavy
been for a while, though.
I know, it's...
It's been heavy West.
And it's even worse West right now, because all these teams have had to gear up to try to go get Golden State, and it just doesn't seem like anyone's even closer right now.
I've said it for the last couple of years. If you win the West, give you the trophy then, usually.
Pretty much. I mean, I think maybe you take the top team from each conference, put them on opposite sides of the bracket, seed everything else.
I like that.
Regardless of conference. I mean,
yeah.
I think that would... That would definitely add to it, because you've got all these pretty good teams in the West who are going to cancel each other out, and you've got maybe two teams in the East who are legitimate contenders right now.
I think it'd be fun.
All right. So The Athletic polled more than 100 college players during the NCAA tournament, asked them a few questions. See if you can guess the answers.
Okay.
One, who won the poll? Best player in college basketball.
Probably Zion.
Yes. Ja Morant and Marcus Howard were number two
and
three.
I had Morant one. When I wrote this down.
Really?
For, like, personally.
So you put him even ahead of Zion.
But I had R.J. Barrett, and I had Carson Edwards in there, too.
Yeah. Most overrated player in college
basketball.
This
was a weird one to ask other players, I would think. I don't know. Who was rated too high? I don't know.
I mean, really, it comes down to jealousy, I think, in a lot of that kind of stuff, doesn't it?
I don't know. Would it be a player on Duke, since most people don't like Duke?
It is, but it's not Zion.
It's not R.J. Barrett, is it?
It is R.J. Barrett.
It's R.J. Barrett, really?
They voted R.J. Barrett, and the top three votes were actually Duke players. R.J. Barrett was number one, Zion was number two, and Cam Reddish was number three.
So Zion was number one
for most
best
overrated
player, and then two for
and also
overrated.
Most overrated. So that shows you that he probably actually is the best, because enough people are...
Don't like him.
That's right. Which coach other than your own would you most like to play for? Who do you think?
I put Beeline down.
Beeline?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Was he even on the list?
Let me see. I've got to go through this here real quick. Beeline did not make the list.
Oh, okay.
Mike Krzyzewski, number one.
Interesting.
I guess it surprises me just because we watch, but he gets guys to the NBA, so I'm sure that has a lot to do with it.
Who else? Was anybody else on there?
Runners up, number two, Tom Izzo.
Okay.
Number three, John Calipari.
Yeah.
Which coach would you like to play for what they said. Number four, which coach would you least like to play for?
I don't know. That doesn't Bobby Knight? I don't know right now. I don't know.
If he were still playing, probably. Bob Huggins, West Virginia, number one. And there were some comments to these. Bob Huggins, just too aggressive for me, is what one of the players said. Not my style. I need to be able to talk to my guy.
I mean, this would have to have either been voted on by players who were upset at their experience, I assume, or went through the recruiting process and didn't choose these places.
Interestingly, three different guys, Calipari, Izzo, Frank Martin of South Carolina,
were all on this.
Were the runners up. They were tied for second. Frank Martin, of course, is a Bob Huggins former assistant, and they've got
similar
quite a bit the same style. And what's interesting to me, like Frank Martin, his only NCAA tournament in 7 years since being at South Carolina was when they went to the Final Four a couple years ago.
Wow.
Hasn't been to the NCAA tournament since or before. So they haven't. Obviously, it doesn't seem like they've capitalized on that in terms of recruiting. But one of the players said about Calipari, I really like an X's and O's coach. He runs off talent. He doesn't have to turn a three-star player into a five-star player. And I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
All right. So what else?
That helps.
The rule change you would most like to see implemented. What do you think the players said?
Oh, what the players said?
Yes.
Do I have options on this?
Because
I was going to say, Sean, you have convinced me about the quarters, changing to the quarters.
You're hard on the quarters
You've
now.
You've convinced me now. I would be okay with that.
All right. I haven't convinced Mr. 45%, though.
He doesn't like it?
No, he's still completely against the quarters.
I can see why, though, because I could see him being like a flow-of-the-game guy, like let's have these quarters, let's have the halves be even longer so I can get more shots up.
And watching...
without having to stop and sit down.
Watching the women's games, I just think it makes sense. I think, to me, you talked about flow of the game. To me, the game flows better when it's quarters. You have natural breaks.
Instead of a
long 20 minutes, yeah, okay. And media timeouts. And you're still going to have media timeouts, but
what
not
the
same way.
What do the players vote on this?
This will shock you. Pay the players. Almost half. The other, be
that
able
was
to
a,
go.
That was a rule change within the game?
Yep. Oh. The other runners, well, not within the game, yeah. But the other votes, be able to go pro immediately, no transfer rules, call defensive 3 seconds, which shocks me that would come up.
Within those, that they bring that up.
I know. It's very random that would come up. But
I guess I was thinking more about like the game itself versus like going pro. Because I would vote.
I think
too.
All
I'd
of us
okay
would. But it's interesting, of course, the first thing the players say,
pay us.
Go to the NBA or get paid. That's right. All right, we're winding things down. Good stuff. We will talk to you next week. 5-star Dive Bar. Stop on by for lunch for Garrett. And for Bob Heading, Sean Stiers, WSBT South Bend.